Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. He says it may be time for a correction. He checks out the action in crude, gold, the U.S. and Canadian dollars, and lumber. Publisher of the Trends Journal, Gerald Celente, joins us from historic Kingston, New York, to talk about the threat AI poses to real journalism and how the stock market could climb even higher, even though the U.S. economy could be in trouble. Veteran trader Victor Adair is here to comment on whether the Fed controls the stock market and the impact of the Russia-Ukraine conflict on our economy. He also talks about the U.S. dollar and gold. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Good to be with you, Jim.
How would you describe the stock markets over the week?
I'd say that we're starting into a consolidation phase. We had January was a pretty darn good month, managed right at the tail end to finally take out the December highs. It had been an inside month right up until the tail end there, but finally managed to put in a new high for the taking out the December and November lows. But by the time we got up there, we're starting to get a little overbought, and we've got these various patterns we look at interim highs where you can get nice little pullbacks. And as of middle of this week, we just had just a handful, but we had wheelbarrow full of signals kicking up. And they're in the broad indices like the S&P and the NASDAQ. And then we had individual stocks that had made big runs like Tesla, which had in 40 days, gone from being down at $100 to being over $200. So we went from a capitulation type of bottom to an exhaustion style of high, where our short and intermediate indicators were both kicking in overbought readings and in need of a sell-off. So for all the markets as a whole doing some thrashing around here during the week, overall, looks like, it's time for a little correction. Doesn't have to be a deep one, but we'll monitor it and just see how far it does manage to pull back.
What's happening with crude?
We ended up the early part of the week, one of our sequential 9 buy signals, and usually you'll get a 3 to 5 day rally out of that. And in this case, we $73 at the beginning of the week. By Thursday, it was starting to look, like the high 70s might be it. And then the Russians on Friday decided to announce a cutback in production and enough to give us a push up to the $80 level. Looking at this 82 to 83, there's a pretty hefty overhead resistance for now. And if it can't gain some steam here, probably get back down and retest the support. Now, in the related items, we take a look at natural gas or gasoline. We end up with good, really, really oversold readings as far as nat gas is concerned, and starting to see some little bit of basing action in there in the last 7 to 10 days. Looking for pretty good bounce in here back to the 20 or 50 day moving averages, which percentage wise, could be a 25% move, which, for most markets would be a reasonable play. in this case, that's going to take us from maybe the 250 up to the 350, maybe. That's probably about it for there. Gasoline, mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. It's basing out in here. Oversold signals early in the week. And the seasonally here typically would carry you from a February move into the spring. And it looks like if anything, this will be a choppier year to the upside than we had last year. So you've got to, you know, be cautious and use timing here to buy the dips. Don't chase it on the upside. Looks like we've got a nice little base setting up in place right now.
What's happening with gold?
Gold, we had that outside reversal a week ago where we, you know, we had that $100 move, the quick hard break. Optimally, we were going to look for it to give back a third of the gains that it made since the October-November lows and test the 50-day moving average. We got close to that as of this Friday. And, you know, maybe we're looking at the 1850 as a first support area. It's going to take some time here to try and build a decent consolidation before the next run on the upside. Historically, the seasonal play is from mid-December through February. In this case, the seasonal got started early, right around the early part of November, so it may have had the better part of its run behind it. You would look for another, if that's the end of the seasonal run, you'd wait another month or two before you'd be ready for the next play on the upside. In particular, then you want to be looking at some of the gold miners, and there's enough of them out there that, you know, you can either choose the ETF, the GDX, GDXJ, or pick some of the individual stocks.
What's going on with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
Well, the pullback as far as the gold is concerned to that 50-day average, if we take a look at the other side of the equation, which is the dollar index, it rallied right up to the 50-day average in the early part of the week, settled back, and then at the end of the week, it's back up testing that again. And this whole consolidation, I'll call it, since Q4 of last year, has been at a pretty good support level when we look at the 2015 through 2020, those highs. This has been a retest of that. It was just a little beyond a 38% retracement, you know, a nice Fibonacci number there. And then we had that same reversal a week ago that we on the upside where we had seen the reversal down in gold. So at this point, the dollar index probably has got some life on the upside. It's just done enough on the downside here. And, I think one should be trading that one from the long side. UUP would be the ETF on that that you would take a look at. And, I don't think you have to risk it all the way back down to the lows again. Probably somewhere around maybe 27.5 is going to be the risk on that.
What's going on in the lumber market? Remember, it was 1,700 bucks. What is it now?
Well, we are trading at one quarter of it, what it was at the top of this move. I mean, here you've got, we had just a really strong rally right at the in January. We managed to go from we're at 1,700. We broke hard into a year ago, had a good bounce back to 1,300, and then just eroded terribly through most of last year. By the time we got to the end of the year, you know, we were down to 350. Good rally back to the 5.25 level, but that one has just given up the ghost again. We're back at 419, and you know these kind of prices for lumber just making it really hard for any of the stocks in the industry there. So it's something to stay away from now. This kind of a break, you know, we might take a look at this in a few months and see if managed to form a base, but for now, I think the dead cat bounce is behind us, and things are looking pretty rough again.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Coming up, Gerald Celente next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
My guest is Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal, online at TrendsJournal.com. He's speaking to us from historic Kingston, New York. Gerald, it's been a while. It's great to have you back on This Week in Money.
Well, thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a bit about the latest issue of the Trends Journal and how people can sign up for it?
Well, it's simple. Just go to TrendsJournal.com, TrendsJournal.com. And this week, for example, was over 170 pages. No ads. So we provide in-depth socioeconomic and geopolitical trend forecasts and trends analysis that you won't find anywhere else. And it's less than $3 a week. So we're doing everything we can to give people the best we can, because we're in very dangerous times right now. And I've been at this for 43 years. Been publishing the magazine since 1991. You know, as you well know, I have best-selling books, Trends Tracking, Trends 2000, and I'm very, very concerned about where we're heading, and we're doing, as I said, everything we can to help the people prepare, prevail, and prosper in these very dangerous times ahead.
Your Trends for 2023 edition came out last month. What are there some of the major trends you're looking out for?
Well, you know, two of them. One is World War III. As we wrote in the magazine cover, illustrated, I should say, not wrote, as the magazine cover illustrated, last February 22nd, 2022, the headline read, From COVID War to Ukraine War to World War. And this was 2 days before Russia invaded Ukraine. And again, we're totally opposed to Russia's invasion. And we totally understand why they invaded. We wrote about this in the magazine when it used to be a weekly. Now it used to be a quarterly. And back in the spring of 2014, we had a major article in there written by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Treasury Secretary under Ronald Reagan, about the United States overthrow of the democratically elected government of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine. And on the violations of the Minsk Agreement, of course, later on in 2014 and 2015, that they would not attack the separatist region, and it was not a region that was going to be separate from Ukraine, but, you know, they didn't vote for the new government that was put in place. And not a word in the media about this, by the way, about how the Ukrainians killed some 15,000, people in the Donbas region. They're all Russian in that area. And that's also what brought on the war. Plus, people have no idea of the agreement made between Gorbachev when it was the Soviet Union, when they broke it up, and Reagan and Bush Sr., that, quote, NATO would not move one inch further. And back then there were 16 NATO countries. Today there were 30. So you're up there in Canada. If the Russians are up there with missiles aimed at America, and down in Mexico, the Chinese were there with missiles aimed into the United States. Oh, we'd be very happy about that. There'd be no confrontation at all. And of course, if the Chinese were off the coast of California and the Russians were off the coast of New York, and let's put the Iranians down in the Gulf of Mexico sailing around, oh, America wouldn't respond at all to that. But you could be in the Black Sea and do anything else you want if you're America and NATO. So people have no idea of the background of this and how You know, this is a war that's already begun. It's not, will World War III happen? It's just going to be, when is it going to become official?
Is smart, as in smart cities, smartphone, smart TV, just another name for control?
It's part of it, yeah. And it's a part of the lack of culture and people losing their own ability to do things and relying on high tech to live for them and guide them. And this ChatGPT is real, and it's going to continue to grow. And you're looking at, you know, one company after another, particularly what they used to call journalism, having them write the stories for them. And it's at every level. You know, when I was a young guy, we used to read maps, you know. Oh, now you could ask Siri, you know. Oh, she's going to give you the best directions, you know. And so it's a whole different world. And the people don't think for themselves before, and now they're not going to be able to think for themselves. Before, they weren't thinking for themselves because they didn't want to. Now, with the tech AI, we own you is one of our top trends for 2023 taking over. It's going to be an even more power. They got it wrong in the King James Bible. They said that the meek shall inherit the earth. It's the geeks have inherited the earth. They misspelt it.
Gerald, do you have any voice-activated devices like Siri or your telephone or your television set where you just say orders or commands and it gives you the answer?
I don't carry a cell phone. I did work for the cellular telecommunications industry going back to 1994 when they had boxes in the trunks of cars with aerials sticking out. And I've been following the negative implications of cell phone and 5G and later on 5G and, you know, radio frequency radiation and on and on. And I don't carry one, don't own one. And by the way, I haven't watched TV now in about 3 years because all it is a bunch of mainstream moron junk, and I don't want to be bothered with it. So I don't, I have no Wi-Fi, any of that.
Could the stock markets move higher into 2024 as the economy declines and consumers cut spending?
Yes, because the stock market has nothing to do with Main Street. Wall Street has nothing to do with Main Street. And when you look at the last, after the last 40 midterm elections in the United States, the last 40 midterm elections, the S&P 500 has gone up some 16% in the following 12 months. So just by going with the numbers, you know, it looks very positive for that. And again, there is absolutely no relationship to Wall Street and Main Street because you have 1% of the Americans, that's right, 1% own 54% of the equity markets, and the whole 10% own 90%. So the rest of the 90%, the 10% that own 90% of the stock markets, but the 90% that own the other 10%, they have in 401ks and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So they're going to do everything they can to rig the markets. They do it all the time. Yeah, the markets may go down, but they're going to, we're forecasting they're going to lower interest rates in the run-ups to the 2024 U.S. presidential reality show. They do it all the time. So, but then again, they're the wild cards. And the wild card, as I said, is the World War III. And if that goes into a nuclear war, forget about it. You know, life will be dead on Earth. They asked Albert Einstein, by the way, what kind of weapons will be used to fight the Third World War? And, I mean, there's a cat that knew a thing or two about the atomic bomb. He said, I don't know. He said, but they'll be using sticks and stones to fight the Fourth. And then the other top trend we have that ties into this to where the markets are going, because all things are connected, is the Middle East meltdown. You're seeing the new right-wing government in Israel. Oh, they announced, I mean, the Jerusalem Post said that the attack on the Russian military facility where they made, the Iranian military facility was done by Israel. So they actually admitted it. So what if Iran struck a base or a manufacturing plant in Israel? Oh, my God, that would have been terrible. But okay, it's okay for Israel to do it. So what I'm saying, the United States is running major, major drills of unprecedented levels with the Israelis in anticipation of a breakout between the United States and Israel against Iran. So if there's a military conflict in the Middle East, you're going to see oil prices skyrocket to above $130 a barrel. That'll crash the global economy and crash the equity markets. So there are a lot of wild cards in the deck right now being that are being played, and other wild cards that you can't see coming that may also be played. But minus the wild cards, it's going to be at worst a flat market as we see it. It's not going to be a booming market.
Is China going to invade Taiwan in 2025?
Who knows? But, you know, this has been going on, what, since the Ming Dynasty? I mean, the United States and everybody concerned about this? I mean, you know, what did the United States, the 20-year war in Afghanistan? Oh, my God, how dare China and Taiwan, which they're claiming, and, by the way, the whole international society, all the countries say that that is part of China's land. Oh, and how did Taiwan get there? When I was a kid, they used to call it Formosa. Oh, Chiang Kai-shek, the guy that they threw out when Mao took over China, went there and they established over there. This isn't, you know, but look what's going on. The United States just opened up 4 new military bases. They're opening up in the Philippines. 4. And they're talking about sending nuclear weapons into South Korea. Isn't that great? Oh, America, yeah. And what was it, the Iraq War? Oh, there were only 2 of them. They killed, what did they say, about between 800,000 to 1 million people in Iraq? And they talk about the Chinese or the Russians? You know, I'm telling you, when all else fails, they take you to war. And they're going to be taking us to war with China and Russia. And if they do, it's going to be the end of life on Earth. You know, I own 3 of the most historic buildings in the United States. It's on the most historic 4 corners, 3 pre-Revolutionary War stone buildings. The other building is a museum. I bought these when I came back from Berlin, when we were opening up the magazine there, the Trends Journal, back in 2012. And they're taking me all around and showing me Berlin. I'm like, oh my God, this place is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Parks everywhere. No building over 16 stories. Unlike the crappy garbage of steel and glass they have now and ruined all the cities around the North America. And I said to myself, this place is grander than Paris before it was bombed out. Because I'm looking at all this beautiful old construction and then all new construction around it. And I said to myself, why didn't the people stop this before everything was destroyed? Where were the people? You're losing. And I came back and there was a for sale sign on the 1750 Franz Rogan house. And I bought it. Because I said to myself, I can't leave this country. I'm me because I'm a Napolitano, born in the Bronx, born to be free. If I was born in Italy, I wouldn't be me. This is my America. So I bought these buildings because I looked at the destruction of the World War II, and that's not ancient history. And we are on the cusp of that again. Could you imagine being in Ukraine now and having everything you have being destroyed? And we're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep fighting. Hey, how about talking about peace? Don't you talk about peace. Peace is banned in all of the media. Oh, God bless America. What kind of God are you talking about? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. What God are you talking about? All the wars you got? People have no idea what's going on here. And I'm saying to you, with all the questions you're asking and everything else, this is the major issue that must be stopped. Russia is now saying Germany is at war again against us. As Putin said at the Stalingrad celebration last week, when they killed over 1 million Russians in Stalingrad, the Germans. Oh, and the Germans, Operation Barbarossa, and they only killed what? Well, depending on whose numbers you look at, between 20 and 25 million. And now Putin's saying, oh, you're bringing all these weapons, the tanks, this and that, you have all your people going over there and saying you have to fight against us? This has nothing to do with you. This has to do with a border dispute that's been going on 300 years between these two countries. People have no idea what's going on here. I have never been more concerned in my life.
What do you think of the Chinese spy balloon that was shot down?
Yeah. Well, it tells you a couple of things. As I said, if they asked, Einstein what kind of weapons will be used. They can't stop. They see a balloon. Stop a balloon. You think you're going to stop hypersonic weapons? I mean, you know, and they make a big deal that they shot down the balloon. I mean, you know, this shows you. Everybody get this straight. America has murdered and their allies, Canada, NATO. They've murdered millions of people since World War II and haven't won a war yet. Haven't won a war yet. Oh, you're telling me you're gonna, what your strategies are or your intelligence? They couldn't shoot down, they couldn't see a balloon coming. And again, it's building up the thing against, you know, again, kids will be going to between Taiwan and China. What the hell do I care? It's not my business. I'm an American. I believe in the founding fathers like George Washington. A real man that could fight, not like these little boys playing president. Oh yeah, Washington crossed the Delaware. Yeah, that Washington. His farewell address. Do not become involved in any foreign entanglements, particularly in Europe, because basically this has been going on between centuries between these countries, and it's not our business. Our business is America. Oh, John Quincy Adams, another founding father, oh, one of those, yeah? Oh, don't go abroad to fight the demons? And what does America have over? Some 900 bases overseas? As the country's rotten in front of us? Hey, you been to San Francisco? No, take a trip to Los Angeles. Hey, how about New York City? Homeless everywhere. Crime skyrocketing. Infrastructure rotting to crap. And over half of America's $1.7 trillion new budget that they just passed goes to the military-industrial intelligence complex.
What do you think the real rate of inflation is?
Well, go to John Williams' shadow stats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at housing prices in America went up, what, 40% in 2 years? That's not included. We don't include housing prices because we're rigging the numbers. We got to make the numbers a lot lower than they really are so we can put more cheap money in here. And also the Social Security is related to the Consumer Price Index. And so the higher inflation goes, the more you have to pay the plantation workers of Slavelandia for all the money we stole from them. So we don't want to pay them much back, so we're going to rig the numbers. So you're looking at the inflation number according to John Williams' shadow stats, and it's all the facts. They started rigging this in the late 1980s, and Bill Clinton was the worst of the riggers. It's double what it is, so you're probably looking at inflation around 14-15%.
Are we likely to see double-digit interest rates?
No. We believe they're going to lower interest rates by the end of the year, the beginning of 2024. You know, there's a great line that was, again, from the Clinton campaign back in the 1992, when all it's the economy, stupid, and that's all the people care about. And so they're going to do everything they can to prop up the economy, because the economy's going down. I mean, you look at the United States, you know, just had a trade deficit, the worst in history.
Does the U.S. dollar look like it's coming off an important bottom?
You know, the dollar is strong because the other currencies are so weak. And so the dollar is going to go down when they get rid of the petrodollar and countries start trading in their own currencies. And there's a trend moving definitely in that direction. How long, how fast it's going to take, you know, it's basically a guessing game. But there is absolutely no question that the death of the dollar, the dollar's dying. You just look at the numbers of people in China and in India. What do you got? 2.8 million people?
Billion.
A billion. Excuse me. Thank you. 2.8 billion people. And what do you have in America? 332 million? What do you have in Europe? About, what, 400, 500 million? So they're tired of the West taking control. And they definitely, matter of fact, now China and is doing business in more and more with their yuan and doing deals with Saudi Arabia.
Is a rising U.S. dollar a concern for gold?
Oh, yeah, sure. Because, you know, commodities are dollar-based, so countries, if the dollar gets stronger, and you're in another country, it costs more to buy gold. But let's look at the facts. The central banks had their biggest gold buying year in 2022. Why? Because they know how bad it is. So when the economy, when they keep raising interest rates, this economy, the economies are just going to keep going down deeper and deeper. And gold is going, you go back to when the panic of 08, when gold started skyrocketing, and the same thing's going to happen. It's the ultimate safe haven asset. And again, I mentioned the Trends Journal before being over 170 pages this week, and so weekly. We don't take any advertisements. So what we say has nothing to do with who's paying us. It's what we see happening. And to us, gold is the number one safe haven asset. There's no question about it.
What do you think the real unemployment rate is?
Well, again, that we wrote about it in this week's Trends Journal. This is an assessment that the government did. When you go back to last year, they were only off at the same period in January by over 104,000 jobs, the more than they said they were created. So when you go look at the facts, and again, we wrote about this in detail in the current issue of the Trends Journal, there were 2.5 million jobs that were lost. 2.5 million. So how did they come up with this number? And then, and these are facts. These are Labor Department facts. And then, and when you go back to December and November, they were firing temporary workers. Temporary workers are the first to be fired when there's a big downturn, just going back to 2007 before the panic of 08, the dot-com bust. And again, look what happened in December sales. They were down. Oh, Mattel just came out with their sales. They were way down. They were way down during the holidays. I mean, that's your biggest, that's your indicator time. If you're firing people during the holidays, you saw retail sales were down during the holidays, it tells you where it's going. And each week we have in the Trends Journal the layoffs going on. This is our 27th week of doing it. They're massive. They're massive. And it's one day after another. What did Disney just announce? How many thousands they're firing? You know, today? You know, it's one after another, day after day. So these numbers are made up.
What are you hearing about Canada?
You know, we don't hear much about Canada other than, you know, it's not a very bright economy in the sense that a lot of people have adjustable rate mortgages there. And as interest rates go up, you know, it's going to be harder and harder for them to pay them. And they're in basically in the same situation as Americans. You have, for example, 64% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And I saw a number come out recently about the problems in Canada, and they were very similar. Again, the whole markets were artificially inflated to fight the COVID war. I mean, period, paragraph, through record low interest rates and dumping, you know, trillions of dollars into economies to artificially prop them up. Oh, and they're blaming now inflation on high wages. What a joke. High wages. The wage rate is way below the inflation rate. And it had nothing to do with it. High wages. And I'm not making that up. That's exactly what they're saying. And that's why they want to slow down the economy. So wages will slow down. So the plantation workers of slave land, you don't have to make much money. And the rich could get richer, as they did in the last 2 years. The billionaires got $27 trillion richer.
Your thoughts on central bank digital currencies. I see Britain's really making a big push for that.
Well, they're all going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we wrote about this years ago. It was one of the covers of the Trends Journal. Almost 3 years ago, from dirty cash to digital trash. And that's exactly what they're going to do. Actually, it was 3 years ago. And they want to know every penny you spent, where you spent it, what you spent it on, so they could get their tax money. And more than that, it's another way they're going to come up. The Russians hacked our banking system or something like
that. Oh, yeah.
That's
right.
And now they stole all your money, but we're coming out with a new digital currency, so don't worry about it. And, oh, by the way, that debt that we had, we don't have to pay it off in dollars anymore. We're paying it off in digital, you know, fake money. So they're going to definitely go digital and take more control of the people and rob them more of their freedom. It's the way of the world right now. It's a devolution of society.
China and Russia have been buying and storing as much gold as they can for at least the last 9 years. Canada and the UK 9 years ago sold off all of their gold. Who was right? What's the right trend?
Well, again, we're very bullish on gold. And just take a look at the numbers that came out from the World Gold Council about central banks having a record year of buying gold. So the dumbbell, look at the terrible thing, the UK, look at the terrible shape that they're in. My God. You know, it's a, they're brilliant, aren't they? I mean, you know, look at the inflation rate is what, about 9.2%? Gold came down from 10.5. You know, yeah, okay, great. You know, it's like, and again, you know, you got dumbbells. Look at the moron you got running, little daddy's boy you got up there playing prime minister. Don't you know who my daddy was? You know, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a joke. It's a joke that the people look up and take orders from these little clowns running a country near you.
Now, I'm from Alberta, which is oil and coal and natural gas country. Britain used to be a coal nation. Wouldn't they have lots of natural gas stored up in the same shale fields that produce the coal if they allowed fracking, but Britain won't, yet they complain about their natural gas bills?
Well, again, you know, fracking has two sides to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's all those chemicals they're pumping into it that, you know, that go into the earth that a lot of people are against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's, it's a true issue. And, you know, they won't even release all the chemicals that they're pumping into it. So, you know, there are a lot of people that are opposed to that.
Would you trust ChatGPT to write the Trends Journal?
Nah, you know, it's when you're looking at that, you're looking at what they did to music as well. All you want to see is the decline of America was to watch the Grammys. And from a time of Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Louis Armstrong, Benny Goodman, all of the great rock and roll guys, you know, and Motown, and now it's just one bad rap, and it's all synthesized and junk.
Yeah, I call it computerized grunting.
Yeah, perfectly said. So that's where your chat is. You know, it's the same level of downgrade. Again, all you have to do is watch the Grammys, how they dress, how they speak, what they sing, what they look like, and you don't have to be very smart to see how bad it is and how far down it's going.
They're kind of dressed up like the characters in the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Or how about the satanic uniforms?
Yeah. Are climate change and 15-minute cities likely to be the next push by the globalists?
Well, they're going to try to push it, but that's not going to go anywhere because it's a farce.
Is the food chain in jeopardy?
I don't believe so. It's in jeopardy in some places, and some places it's not. There's definitely going to be problems. There's no question about it. But how will it be that kind of a major problem? It's probably over 50%, yes, I would say. It's going to be an issue, but right at the moment. Again, you can't forecast what the weather's going to do.
Are the experimental injections having a human toll as well as an economic toll?
Well, they're definitely having an economic toll in the sense that the COVID war has changed society. Where I am, it's dead here at 9 o'clock at night. It's a whole new world.
Yeah, it is here in Vancouver as well. After 9 o'clock, everything's dark, and the people who are on the street are downright scary.
Yep. Yeah. So the damage that this has done, the COVID war, physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, it's incalculable. And it's global. It's global. And so, you know, as far as the injections go, you know, I would go to Dr. Mercola, Joseph Mercola's site, or Children's Defense Fund with RFK Jr. to get really the hard data on that.
Tent cities, homeless camps popping up everywhere. We had 4,000 people camped out on the streets of downtown Vancouver. They're trying to clear it up. But was the first mistake allowing that first tent to set up on a public street? any thoughts on what can be done about this?
Well, we have a homeless situation, a homeless solution that everybody we've sent to the media and they refuse to publish it. And that is, well, you have all that beautiful land. An hour outside of Vancouver and you're in a beautiful country with hardly anybody there. So build homeless towns. Put the people in beautiful places in a homeless town and give them jobs to do, work to do. You know, certain to have them doing arts, crafts, gardening when it's appropriate, you know, growing food. Put them in towns rather than spending billions of dollars putting them in shelters and putting them in and letting them be on the streets. You know, I mean, you know, you don't pay all this money to buy something to have somebody there, you know, ruin it for you. You know, I'm sorry for them, but let's give them, there used to be a movie called Boys Town, and they put these kids in these beautiful areas.
I saw that movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah, and so to do the same thing with homeless towns. They refuse to, none of the media will publish it, and none of the politicians get back to us on it.
I always thought there should be a sign next to the one that says, welcome to Vancouver, home of the 2010 Winter Olympics. It should say, you're now entering the third most expensive city in the world to live in. Do you have a job and do you have a place to stay?
Yeah.
Just those questions, really.
Look, you go to LA, San Francisco, New York City. It's unbelievable, particularly out in LA and San Francisco. Oh my God. You know, it's everywhere.
Are you driving an electric car yet?
No, I drive a 1994 Audi Cabriolet. I hate all this modern junk. It's still so stupid. Why cars are so expensive. They've got all this nonsensical high-tech junk into it.
Gerald, I would just like to buy a car. No computerized junk. Sort of like my dad's 1962 Chevy Impala, except I would have seatbelts. It didn't.
Yeah, my sister had a 1960 Chevy Impala convertible.
Damn good cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. All this electronic crap in there. The trunk opens by itself, the door. Oh, this stupid. Yeah, but put back down the roll-down windows. You know, cut back on the price. You don't need all this stuff. It's a very, very simple instrument to navigate. You know, no, it can navigate by itself. It could do this. It could do that. That's why they cost, the average price of a car, like $46,000?
Yeah, it's $20,000 for the car and $26,000 for the computer.
Yeah.
Gerald, how can people subscribe to the Trends Journal?
Again, trendsjournal.com, trendsjournal.com. And by the way, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. And it, there's no magazine. In-depth trends analysis, trend forecasting, and in geopolitics and socioeconomic events that you will not find anywhere else. It's history before it happens. You look at our forecast, one after another. Do we get it right all the time? Of course not. We're human beings. But we'll put our tracker record up against anybody, anywhere. And again, these are very dangerous times. And so I would very much suggest people subscribe to the Trends Journal, trendsjournal.com. Again, it's less than $3 a week.
Gerald, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you, and thank you for all that you're doing.
My guest has been Gerald Celente, publisher of the trendsjournal.com. He was speaking to us from historic Kingston, New York. Coming up, Victor Adair, next on This Week in Money.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Victor Adair. Recently retired from nearly 50 years of being in the brokerage business in BC, but still very, very active in the markets. He's speaking to us from Parksville on Vancouver Island. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Jim, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Victor, price changes in the financial markets, currencies, stocks, interest rates seem to be primarily driven by expectations of Federal Reserve policy. Do you agree with that? And what do you think the market currently expects from the Fed?
Well, I think the market has been living and dying on what they expect the Fed to do for far too long. But certainly, it's a very, very important thing, and it has been for some time. So, you know, we would see, let's put it this way, the Fed is clearly focused on trying to bring inflation down. So when inflation numbers like the CPI reports hit the market, we're all over the map. As everybody's trying to second guess what this will mean in terms of monetary policy. The relative strength of the U.S. dollar against other currencies has been very much a function, of American interest rates being higher or being moved higher in a more aggressive fashion than other places. And certainly the stock market's been living and dying on, you know, what they think the Fed's going to do. So, yes, it's been probably the most important thing in the markets. And now where we're at. Last year, the Fed and the Bank of Canada as well, raised interest rates aggressively. I think we went up about 4.5 percentage points, on both sides of the border, from a more or less nothing, a year ago. And, lately, the Bank of Canada, for instance, just a week or so ago said, okay, they're gonna stop raising rates here and just see what is the impact of what they did last year, understanding that there's a lag from jacking up interest rates until it actually ripples all the way through the economy. The American market, I think, people have been expecting the Fed to slow the rate of increase, and they have. They've gone from 75 basis points to 50 to this last time around 25. The market, when I look at the forward rates, we're expecting another 2 times 25 basis point increases, but that's certainly in flux. And going back a week or so ago, we had the last FOMC meeting, and then we had what I'm calling a key turn date in the market. And I'll keep this short and sweet, but for the past couple of months, the market has been fighting the Fed in the sense that Chairman Powell has made it clear, I think, that the Fed's just not gonna cut rates this year. Now, he can't really say anything else, there's that. But, you know, he says that if they cut rates too early, that risks reigniting inflation, and he just doesn't want to take that risk. But the market seemingly doesn't believe him. The market's been pricing in short rates to increase until about June, and then to actually fall pretty sharply. I think over the next 18 months, the market was expecting rates to be down about 200 basis points. So fighting the Fed, you know, there's been a lot of people over the years that have cautioned markets, do not fight the Fed because, you know, you're up against a formidable foe. But that's been the way it's been until last week, Thursday, as I say, February 2nd. I'm calling it a key turn date because a number of markets turned that day. It seemed as though the Fed, or I should say the market now, is truly expecting the Fed to stay higher for longer. That seems to be what's in the market. Now, what that means is I'm thinking over the past couple of months anyway, if not more, maybe you go back to the October lows when the stock indices hit a two-year low. The market has been taking on more risk, and that was never more apparent than since we started this year, where some of the dogs of last year were bid aggressively higher. Certainly some of those positions had big short positions, and as prices went up, shorts had to cover, so we had a really spectacular rise in some of the beaten up stocks from last year. But there's just been this sense across markets that, you know, you could take risk on trade. So that means, you know, you buy stocks, you sell the U.S. dollar, you buy commodities, and so on. So there's a lot to unpack there, but yes, the Fed policy has been really important, and it seems as though just lately the market's kind of reassessing whether or not the Fed's going to cut this year, and it looks like less likely.
At the World Financial Outlook Conference in Vancouver last weekend, you said markets were pricing a stalemate in Ukraine, but if Russia gained the upper hand, that would have a huge impact on wrongly positioned markets. What did you mean by that?
I was on a closing panel with three other fellows that I really admire, and Mike Campbell, the host of the conference, asked us all, what do you think would be the biggest surprise this year? Now, he'd forewarned us about that question about 30 seconds before we got on the stage, and I know all four of us looked at each other and thought, oh man, that's a hell of a question. But anyway, I said, you know, I think the biggest surprise would be that if Russia starts to gain the upper hand in the Ukraine. And I said, as a sort of a subset to that, I think the market has been so focused on monetary policy and to a lesser degree, let's say, you know, inflation that's driving it and fiscal policy, but they've kind of forgotten about geopolitical risk. And certainly, you know, we saw an example of geopolitical risk last February when Russia actually went into Ukraine. You know, the satellites could see that they had all kinds of troops on the border, but people were just surprised or shocked when they actually went in. Now, I think that most of the media that we see here in the West has given us the idea that the Ukrainians are punching way above their weight. You know, they're prevailing, if not even pushing the Russians back. And, you know, maybe in our heart of hearts, we hope that they win and so on. But, I think the market is at least is positioned for the war to be kind of a non-event. You know, it's like off in a corner somewhere and we can deal with other things like whether or not the Fed or the ECB is changing policy. But I just think the biggest surprise could be that if Russia starts to turn the tables, like I just don't think the markets are prepared for that. That would have some people really scratching their heads and saying, oh my gosh, if that's the case, then what? Well, for instance, the past few months we've seen a capital flow from the safety, relative safety anyway, of North America back to Europe, back into emerging markets. As the markets has embraced risk, you know, that's one of the things they've done. So the second part of Michael's question was, you know, what's going to be the biggest surprise? And if that happens, what would you do about it? So my answer to that was I'd be selling the euro. I mean, that may be, you know, bluntly obvious that you'd want to see that you could expect the euro currency to fall, but positioning, and you mentioned that, positioning is so important. And over the last several months, certainly since September, maybe even earlier, we've seen speculators in the currency futures market really aggressively buying the euro, perhaps, you know, seeing or as a reflection of capital flowing from North America back to Europe, you know, the existential winter where everybody was going to freeze to death in the dark because they didn't have enough energy to go around in Europe. That wasn't playing out. So maybe Europe was a hell of a bargain. The euro currency was at 20-year lows, that sort of thing. So the positioning now has been sort of very aggressively moving into Europe. And if there was a real serious reassessment as to how things were going in Ukraine, how things are going, it doesn't even need to be that the Russians seem to be winning, we could have a significant escalation in the war over there. So I think the war has been kind of forgotten, and people have been more focused on monetary policy. I'm just reminding the room, I guess, that geopolitical risk is still out there, whether it's Ukraine, Taiwan, the Middle East, North Korea, whatever. Don't overlook geopolitical risk.
The U.S. dollar index hit a 20-year high last September and fell 12% from those highs to recent lows. What are your thoughts on the currency markets?
The U.S. dollar had a very aggressive run to the upside for the 12 months or so prior to it making a high in September. One of the fundamental reasons there was the Fed was raising rates much more aggressively than the European Central Bank wasn't even raising rates then, but they were just seen to be much more aggressive, certainly more aggressive than Japan. And the currency markets have these trending patterns where they'll go and go and go in one direction before they'll turn on a dime and go the other way. What I think now, and as you have reminded me, for most of 2020 and 2021, I was bullish, clearly bullish, the U.S. dollar, and kind of started to wobble about that, September, October, as the correction was ensuing. And that correction, by the way, since the high on the U.S. dollar index in September, we've corrected about 50% of the rally that had happened over the preceding year. I think the U.S. dollar's had a correction in a longer-term uptrend. And I'm very aware that other people have different opinions about that, people who I respect and I think that, you know, really got a good handle on things. But, you know, that's been kind of my idea. I've been U.S. dollar bullish. One of my favorite sayings is capital comes to America for safety and opportunity. I've been saying that for 40-some years. I still believe that to be true. Capital will leave America from time to time, go into other markets like it has done the past couple of months. I mean, there's been quite a rush into emerging markets, and it makes me smile. I remember a saying from Donald Cox. He used to say, emerging markets are markets you cannot emerge from in an emergency. And boy, oh boy, is that true. But, you know, people get excited when there's perceived opportunities. They'll fall all over themselves to go into a market that they might have trouble getting out of later. What I think about the U.S. dollar is that it's had a correction from the highs, the 20-year highs that hit last February. And I think the turn date here was what I've just referred to. Here is this key turn date on February the 2nd. The U.S. dollar made a 10-month low and is higher from there. Now, I've been, for the last month or so, taking stabs at playing the U.S. dollar from the long side. I made some money at the turn of the year, but on balance since December, I've lost a little money making that bet. But, you know, I talked my book, so that's what I've been doing. I've been wrong about that, but I think it's starting to kick in now. No, and I should add, Jim, just as a point, you know, North America is virtually, if not entirely, energy self-sufficient. There's none of the other major places, you know, that is the case, like Europe or Japan, certainly. We've got higher interest rates in the United States and in other parts of the world. And I just think if things get a little shaky or people get worried about things, you know, you see the U.S. dollar get bid, you see North American markets get bid, and other markets fall away. So, yeah, I'm back to being bullish on the U.S. dollar, and, you know, I'll certainly change my mind if the market heads the other way.
Gold rallied more than $300 from early November to early February, but then fell about $100 in 2 days. What's driving price changes in the gold market?
Well, as we've talked on the show before, gold's had a pretty strong negative correlation with the U.S. dollar for years, you know, because gold's priced in U.S. dollars, certainly it's part of it. But if the U.S. dollar is weak, you know, gold kind of catches a bid. Gold also had a pretty good correlation with real interest rates over the past, I'll call it 5-6 years for sure, and that kind of faded this year, recently anyway, with real interest rates rising and gold not falling. And I guess toward the end of last year, we started to get news or information that there'd been some pretty substantial central bank buying of gold last year, particularly late in the year. I mean, China, Russia in particular, but a number of other countries as well. And that was both official buying that was announced, and then people like the World Gold Council and that sort of thing kind of decide that there's been unofficial buying or unreported buying by those people as well. But I think we're talking something like 1,400 tons. Now, you know, that's, I probably shouldn't throw that number out there because I'm doing that by memory, but it was something like that, pretty substantial. So that gave the market a bid. The weak U.S. dollar gave gold market a bid. The correction here I mean, I'm going to be a broken record on this, but the high on the gold market was February the 2nd. You know, that same key turn date. And when I say a key turn date, what I'm meaning is when a number of markets reverse course on the same day, or more or less the same day, something big has happened. And I think the big thing that's happened is the markets realized that the Fed is going to stay higher for longer with interest rates. And the gold market had probably got ahead of itself on a $300 rally. And so, you know, we had a nasty two-day correction of $100. Where do we go from here on gold? I think always depends on your time frame. But I think we're going to see a continuation of a U.S. dollar gold correlation. It seems that interest rates, or real interest rate correlation with gold, might come back into play. But I could also see, if I go back to this geopolitical worry that I have that it's being underpriced, I could see gold and the U.S. dollar both getting bid at the same time if the world has a scare. You know, if they think, you know, I don't mean to be a worry monger, but, you know, if one of these places that I mentioned, whether it's Taiwan or North Korea, the Middle East or the Ukraine, if things take a lurch for the worst, you know, you could see gold and the U.S. dollar both higher. So the gold ETF market, which I talk about a lot, or certainly pay attention to it, really, other than, you know, right, a spike of buying around the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year, the retail's been a net seller of gold over the last 2 years in the ETF market. So it's been out of favor. And in this $300 rally, retail finally came in as a buyer when we were up about $250. So, you know, they kind of cherry picked or top picked this recent rally. So, the public is not banging down the doors to buy gold, I guess is what I'm saying. And, you know, you'll see that kind of behavior when the market's making a high. I don't have a position one way or the other on gold right now. I was short of gold just near the top, got stopped out the day before we made the high, and I was attending a conference and couldn't pay attention to markets and didn't get back on board to catch the $100 break. So those are just sort of some of the liabilities, I guess, of going and speak at conferences. But as a trader, you put bad stuff behind you and just look ahead.
The leading stock indices trended lower most of last year, hit two-year lows in October. They bounced back, but posted good gains in January after struggling in December. You said the Fed expectations significantly impact market sentiment, but what else is in play? Are you bullish?
Short answer, I'm not bullish on stocks here. One of the things that happened, I think, you know, we made a two-year low, as you said, in October on the main indices, you know, like the Dow and the NASDAQ and the S&P, that sort of thing. And we rallied from there, maybe 20%, I guess, at last week's highs, if you look at the S&P or the Dow. I think the market really was thinking the Fed is slowing down, and given how important what the Fed is doing, I've described in my blog many times that once the market gets the notion that the Fed is pretty much done raising rates, that's when the green light starts flashing and people start buying with both hands. So there's been some of that. I think it got interrupted in December, which is usually, you know, seasonally, December's a good month, but worries about a looming recession seem to be, you know, holding sentiment back in December. The thought being, I guess, if there's a recession, then corporate earnings are down, and, you know, if corporate earnings are down, people are less aggressive, certainly, or less willing to be buyers of stock. What else do I think about that? I mean, we had, in January, the market came out of the gate strong. We had a very strong month in January. One of the things that was so obvious was that, some of the dogs of last year were stars of this year, or certainly the most shorted stocks last year were bid aggressively this year. And when people have been short stocks and enjoying that, and then suddenly the market starts rising, you know, they're in there aggressively buying to cover their shorts. So we had a pretty strong start to the year here. I think the recession narrative has kind of morphed into, well, maybe just a soft landing. And there's been this risk-on tone, and I think that was maybe most showed up with the rush to buy markets other than America. Now, certainly, the American stock market in aggregate capitalization is bigger than the rest of the world put together. I hope I'm not exaggerating too much there, but something to that effect. Like, it's just so important, so big. And the American stock market, particularly driven by, you know, the big aggressive tech stocks, had just hugely outperformed the rest of the world for the past few years. So I think some folks saw, you know, moving money from America into other markets, particularly European markets. They were buying bargains, or certainly things that where the spreads had been wider than ever. I saw the UK, the British stock index, the FTSE, went to all-time highs this week or last week. Let's see, what else could I say about that? I'm not particularly bullish on the stock market, although I certainly respect momentum in that market. I see the S&P itself as a risk barometer, and I think the fact that it made a high and turned down last week on February the 2nd is part and parcel of that, that the market's seeing a little more risk ahead, whether it's the risk of the Fed's not going to be easing aggressively, or maybe junk got bid up a little too much, so we're going to sit back a bit. So, yeah, I've been, the last 10 days or so, I've been trading the stock market from the short side, and I'm flat at the moment.
Central banks worldwide raised interest rates last year, with the Bank of Canada and the Fed raising rates at the fastest pace in 40 years. Some analysts expect the central banks to stop raising rates and start cutting rates this year. What do you think they're going to do?
Well, yeah, we kind of covered this a bit, I guess. I'm inclined to think, and I'm willing to be wrong about this, but I'm inclined to think that the Fed, because they're fighting inflation, that's their main thing right now, and I'm inclined to think that inflation is going to stay higher for longer. So I don't think we're going to see the aggressive cutting of interest rates. Like I mentioned earlier, the forward strip that I could look at, the market is seeing the Fed raising rates another 50 basis points between now and June, and then beginning to cut rates, or at least that's what the market's pricing, as much as close to 200 points by December of 2024. That may well happen. I mean, who am I to argue? That's what the market is pricing. But I think the market kind of wants to see things that way. Maybe the thought would be, you know, because of the aggressive raising of rates, that something is going to break. In other words, you know, there's a short circuit in the financial plumbing in the world, or somebody major defaults on a loan, that sort of thing. And I wonder a little bit about this company in India that's taken the hits that they have, if that might be a black swan starting to show its head. But if in fact something breaks in the financial plumbing and that sort of thing, then the Fed would cut rates and we've got to save the day and do the same old thing, print a lot of money, get rates down to nothing, and, you know, we're off to the races. When Powell says that they're determined to fight inflation and get inflation down, and there's nothing more important than that, I think he means it. So, no, I don't think that we're going to see the central banks cutting rates aggressively, you know, outside of some exogenous shock that means that they have to.
Inflation soared to multi-decade highs early last year, but has been decreasing since then. What are your thoughts on inflation?
You know, I listen to a lot of economists, and they've got their different views. And I mean, David Rosenberg comes to mind, and you know, he likes the bond market here. I mean, he sees the economy slowing. He sees the Fed's going to be cutting interest rates, and you know, I because I've got a different point of view, I need to understand his thinking, and he could well be right. But here's where I'm coming from. Consumers absolutely know that inflation of the things that are important to them is much higher than the CPI numbers. I mean, go to a restaurant lately, you know, go to a hotel, do any number of things, put gas in your car, that sort of thing. I think the consumers are going to continue to try to earn more money, to get their wages up. I think there's just going to be pressure there from wages. So, you know, you can maybe see where this is going, like a wage price spiral. As people get paid more, you know, that pushes up, they can afford the inflation, and that pushes up inflation and so on. You know, the anecdote to that, and some people argue this will happen, is that unemployment will rise. That the unemployment rate here, which is near record lows now, is a lagging indicator, and so that's the last thing to happen. Even Chairman Powell has been talking about we may have a secular shortage of workers. That, you know, a lot of boomers have just retired early. A lot of people that left the workforce around COVID aren't coming back. I mean, we see it in the numbers. There's, you know, a million more job openings than there are workers in the United States. And I think that sort of thing could continue. So, my thought is that people keep trying to get more pay, get their wages up. And because of the shortage of workers, they'll get that, and inflation is certainly, you know, goods inflation has been coming down. Maybe overall inflation will come down. I pay a lot of attention to the detail there. But my general thinking is inflation is not coming back down below 2% and staying there. That we're into a new era here of higher inflation, and that will mean higher interest rates than what we've been used to, the trend, you know, over the past 40 years when Volcker broke the back of inflation, and for the next 40 years interest rates trended lower. Inflation was almost a non-event. And I guess another part of that, of why I think that, is the change from monetary policy to fiscal policy. I think if the government's learned anything in the COVID era, it's they can spend money without restraint, you know. And a good part of the inflation that we have now has come from basically the old thing of, you know, it's all about the money supply, and it's been increased exponentially is probably too strong a word, but there's been a lot of government spending out there, and government will go into debt, and people might be nervous about buying a government bond that only yields 2%, so they won't do it, and they'll have to, you know, raise rates to get people to come in and buy the bond market. So, long story short, inflation certainly coming down, the CPI numbers are coming down, but people, the consumers, know that inflation is much higher than what those numbers show. They're gonna push for higher wages. And I think we're in a new era of higher inflation and higher interest rates.
The central banks want to use the same theories they used 40 years ago to bring inflation under control. But back then, we didn't have a labor shortage with a bunch of baby boomers all retiring at the same time. Looking for job losses as an indicator of how well your economic plans are going, are they going to be accurate this time? Because we had a million jobs wanting in Canada and 11 million in the U.S.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to pretend to be an economist. I mean, I pay attention to this stuff because I'm a trader, and if I'm wrong, you know, I lose money, so it pays me to pay attention. I am more inclined, I guess, to think that inflation stays higher, and as a result, because the Fed's trying to fight inflation, interest rates stay higher than what we've been used to in the last, you know, decade or two.
On your weekly blog at victoradair.ca, you write about macro markets and post lots of charts. You detail trades you've made and discuss trades you might make, but also talk about trading, how to manage risks, emotional swings, and so on. Can you give us some examples of managing risk and emotional swings?
Well, those two things definitely go together. If you don't manage risks, you will definitely get emotional, unless you're a robot, I suppose. I read somewhere, it was Brent Donnelly was his name. I think I saw a video on Real Vision with him, and he hauled out an old chestnut, but it was a beauty. And that is that rule number one in trading is don't blow up. So in our language, what blow up means is, you know, you lose all your money. You get some idea in your mind, the market goes against you, you get stubborn, you know, you probably add to a losing position, on and on and on. Everybody, you know, that's traded knows exactly what I'm talking about. And first thing you know, you get the tap on the shoulder if you're on a prop trading desk, or if it's just, you know, trading at home in your pajamas, you gotta go back to work because trading isn't working. So kind of with that, that's sort of my basic approach to trading is, no one trade I put on is important. So one of the easiest ways to make sure that that happens is to keep my size small. I mean, if you've got big size on and you're wrong, you know, you go to the graveyard quickly. If you're trading with small size, you might just bleed to death slowly, but you know, you're still dead. But, I think having small losses is way better than large losses because, you know, it gives you time to maybe rethink your process or your methodology or whatever. So, I mean, I have lots of opinions and I'm wrong lots. And I try to just let it go. Okay, wrong. I mean, I use stops a lot. I guess it's sizing as much as is maybe the most important thing. And just having a willingness to be able to say you're wrong. Picture it this way. If you are absolutely convinced that you're right in the market, and the market is showing you that you're wrong, you know, you're going to be very emotional, probably make irrational decisions about that trade. If you have a small position on the market's moving against you, for me anyway, I can look at it and say, well, geez, this isn't working out, so, you know, just kick it out. And you do need to stay fairly level emotionally. I mean, I get times when I'm just, you know, cranky about something. I seem to stub my toe time and time again and go, gee whiz, I'm just so out of sync. And that's part of the process, you know. I mean, trading is not easy and it's not fun. You know, it's just, it's a grind. But it's also, you know, wonderfully challenging. And when you're right, you know, it pays off handsomely, so. I guess that's why I do it, but I wouldn't recommend that everybody just quit their day job and do that, because it's tough sledding sometimes.
Victor, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you kindly for having me on.
My guest has been Victor Adair, recently retired from being in the brokerage business, but still very active in the markets. Check out his website, victoradair.ca. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Gerald Celente, and Victor Adair. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.